Blog Talk Radio.
Salutations, my friends. Salutations. And thank you for tuning in to another edition of Factions of Freedom. I'm your host, Noise Era, Freedom Faction, whichever one you prefer. And I'm actually going to be joined for the part three epic discussion with Chrissy Scarborough and her lawyer, T. Matthew Phillips, as they update us about their lawsuits against, or their lawsuit against Facebook. Let's see if we can get them on right now. Christy, are you with us?
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Fantastic.
Okay.
T. Matthew, are you with us?
Oh, rock and roll. We're ready to party.
Good show. Good show. How are you guys doing this morning?
Great. Thank you so much for having me on again. Just for your listeners, if anybody didn't already know from your last shows, I have filed a lawsuit against Facebook for infringing on my free speech. They've been taking down anything and everything they can on my page, things that are not threats, they're not nudity. Some of them are just funny memes. And you know that it's our right, our constitutional right to be able to freely speak, write, and publish our sentiments on all subjects. So we have a few status updates as to where we're at right now with the lawsuit. We did have a hearing, I believe that's what it was called, back in November, on November 4th. Was that correct, T-Matt?
Okay. November 8th it was, actually.
Okay, hey. Yes. You know, and okay. Before I even get into that, I want to bring up a little bit. We have had a lot of troll activity coming on Facebook to, I guess, talk trash about the lawsuit. You know, it won't win. Facebook's a private company, blah, 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 blah. So if anybody is listening today that is a non-believer, if they think the free speech is kind of dead and Facebook can do whatever they want, I want them to call. There was one guy specifically, Brian Flynn, and he is an attorney, and he's been, like, harassing me like crazy, keeping on tabs on the entire lawsuit.
You would figure he would try to stand for it.
I have to say, can I interrupt real quick? It's funny you mentioned that name because I know that name, Brian Flynn. I got to say, he's a lawyer, kind of like a greenhorn lawyer, meaning he's only been admitted to the bar for a relatively short period of time, maybe a year or so. But he actually went to law school at the same school where Doritos Rubenstein, that's the known pro-vaccine, full-on Zionist type troll hired by pharma. And so it's funny because I guess he was under her tutelage, I guess. And it's funny to see that he's still following us into the world of free speech. I had to say that because I think it's so humorous. So, anyways.
So is this guy like a known scumbag or?
Pretty much. He really is.
I mean, you know, the thing is, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I mean, he's a lawyer, and so he's licensed, and he apparently, you know, passed the bar, so he kind of knows what time of day it is. But what's interesting about the guy is nobody really knows where he works, and not like he works at the law firm of so-and-so. His job is to be online. I mean, you have to believe that he's hired by a Merck or a Pfizer or, you know, an Abbott Industries or maybe Sanofi Pasteur, GlaxoSmithKline, Lilly, any of these companies, or maybe one of their many kind of subsidiaries. They have a lot of, you know, PR type, you know, I guess organizations that work with them, and you have to believe that this guy Brian Flynn works for them because all he does is just spout pro-vaccine rhetoric, you know, and it's not like he has anything interesting to say, anything compelling, anything legal. He's just a person who says over and over vaccines are safe and effective. And of course, anytime, you know, we do a lawsuit, he's there to say the lawsuit sucks, it's going to lose, you know. And that's what Facebook has become. I don't know if we're going far afield here, but the truth is that all of those companies I named, like Merck and Pfizer and Monsanto, They each of those companies probably has at least 500 or 1,000 employees whose job it is to be online like all day long. And if they're a Monsanto employee, they're going to say all the stuff like, oh, we want to have labeling. We want to label GMO so we can know what we're eating or whatever, you know. Which is, by the way, you know it's a total hoax when people start talking about GMO labeling, because the people that are advocates of GMO labeling are the ones that are saying that GMOs are so harmful, GMOs are bad for you. Oh, I guess we got to label them, you know. I mean, why? What is the purpose of labeling poison? You know, free-thinking people don't label known poisons for human consumption. I mean, what's the purpose? So the people, the poor people eating the top ramen will know that their food is like laced with genetically modified poisons. You know, the point is that when you hear... I'm sorry, I was going on a tangent here, but anybody advocating GMO labeling is working for Monsanto or Bayer or Dow or Syngenta or any of these...
Pardon? It got exposed just last year that Monsanto actually did hire up like thousands of internet trolls to cover up Roundup's cancer risks. You guys can go look this up. And then we saw what happened recently with Dwayne Johnson and his $289 million payout against Monsanto and their glyphosate. So even though we know they hire online trolls to spread disinformation, misinformation, to combat public opinion, it still backfires because, in the end, they do have to pay out.
Yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
That was a terrific victory, by the way. So what are we supposed to talk about this morning?
Well, a few of the updates. Was there anything, I'm trying to think, for the past to update anybody on what we've already gone through or been through this situation? I think the day that we actually filed the lawsuit was actually back in July. So it's kind of been it's a lengthy process. Where we were at now after the hearing, I think I should let you kind of pick up this part, right, Tina?
I'm always happy to, you know, talk. If I talk too much, just put a sock in my mouth and we'll call it a day. Just to update on the lawsuit, yeah, we filed on July 13th, and that was a symbolic day, July 13th, not just because it was Friday the 13th, but because Facebook ostensibly wanted to impose this a unilateral type contract on everybody, saying that, I don't know if anybody remembered it or who saw it, but Facebook was saying that if you don't agree to the terms and conditions, then your continued use will mean that you are automatically bound to those terms and conditions. Well, that just simply doesn't fly. You know, Facebook is a California corporation. Their lawyers should know the law. And the point is, you can't unilaterally impose a contract on somebody. That's like saying, hey, Christy, you know, I want to buy your Mustang for $25,000. If I don't hear from you, I'll assume it's a yes and that we've entered into agreement. Well, one person can't unilaterally impose the terms of a contract or create a binding contract. So, but just in case to remove any problems, we wanted to file before that. They gave July 14th as the deadline, so we filed on the 13th. That's how I remember the day. But this past November 8th, we did have a hearing. What happened is Facebook objected to the lawsuit, and at this stage of a litigation, all defendants will routinely object. They want to either dismiss the case in its entirety, or maybe certain portions of a lawsuit can be dismissed. And that's the nature of the motion that was heard on November 8th. Now, Facebook's argument was truly remarkable. They were saying that they have a free speech right to engage in censorship. Now, I'm paraphrasing here, but this is essentially their legal argument. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's utterly without merit. It's not even very lawyer-like when you think about it.
So they're saying that it's their free speech, or that it's their right to censor us. Like, that's their free speech ability to censor us.
And the judge agreed.
Yeah, exactly. Like Christy just said, what's truly remarkable is that the judge agreed. And in my opinion, the judge committed blatant error, because the judge never adjudicated our rights. If you think about it, the judge, I remember saying this, I was in open court, you know, in Los Angeles, and I don't want to be too critical of the judge because as attorneys, you know, the state bar requires that we be respectful at all times to the judge, and so I want to adhere to that. But the judge, we do believe, made an error, a demonstrable error, because the judge only adjudicated the rights of Facebook and really only spoke to their free speech rights and never really mentioned at all our free speech rights. Essentially, what the judge said was that Facebook has a free speech right under the First Amendment, a free speech right to engage in censorship. Now, that is I think, again, is completely wrong. I told the judge in open court, I asked, rather, I said, Your Honor, well, what about our rights? And the court was kind of curt with me, and the court didn't really want to, it seemed, at least to me, didn't want to hear any arguments. The court kind of had made up its mind, at least was the impression that I had garnered from being there. But if you
it's
look
almost
at the
paradoxical
argument,
that they would stand for, you can't, I feel like it's philosophically, like, impossible to stand for free speech, to stand for free speech, but censoring another, like, that's paradoxical. It doesn't make sense.
You know, I got to say, I like your style, and I just wrote down the way you said that because I think it was very lyrical, actually. So I'm taking notes.
It doesn't make sense to me. It's like, how if the idea of free speech is for it to be free, so then why are we saying condemn this type of speech or shut down this person? It's like, philosophically, you cannot stand for free speech if you want to shut down others. It doesn't compute. Like, that's paradoxical.
It's also, I just think it's insincere. It's not, you know, not a sincere argument. I'm surprised that the court bought the argument. I really, really am, because we thought there'd be a completely different battleground. But just backing up here again, this is truly a novel concept. You know, nobody's ever come out and taken this position before. But essentially, their legal argument is that that these internet cartel members, and I don't know who the free speech right applies to, but the feeling I got was that if you're an internet cartel member, meaning Facebook, YouTube, Google, or Twitter, then you have a free speech right to censor others. That is an extremely bold and far-reaching and dystopian, like Orwellian proposition. It's kind of scary as hell if you think about it, because that really is by probably the strongest statement against free speech you could possibly make, is to assert that there's a free speech right in censorship. And I don't think there is, legally speaking. My counter to that is that there can be no free speech right in censorship, because censorship in itself is inherently wrong. And if I could just give you an analogy, I don't mean to be stealing the floor here, but I got to give you this one. You know, I used to argue politics on Facebook. I don't have the time anymore. I'm not even interested. But I used to have the most curious arguments with these libertarians who, for example, wouldn't go along with equal pay for women. They just said, no, it's a free country. I can pay a woman what I want. You know, freedom to contract. I can strike a bargain and pay one woman. It's not the government's business if I want to pay a woman 75 cents less on the dollar, whatever it is, or 75% on the dollar. But basically, what these libertarians would argue is that they have a free speech – strike that – that they have a freedom to discriminate. It's a flawed argument, but this is what I would get from these libertarians saying that they have a freedom to discriminate, meaning they could hire black people if they wanted to or didn't want to, or Chinese folk if they did, you know, they can do whatever they want. And I think it's pretty clear that if two people are similarly situated, they should be paid the same regardless of which sex they are or identify with, or which gender or which race they happen to be or which race they identify with. But it's almost they're using the same logic with the Facebook thing, saying we have a free freedom constitutional right to discriminate, or strike that, to censor. The point is there is no constitutional right to censorship and no constitutional right to discrimination. It's just funny how people will wrap themselves in the flag and cite the Constitution and say freedom of this and freedom of that. Well, you don't have a free constitutional right to do things that should be universally considered as inherently wrong, because it is paradoxical, like you'd said earlier. But what do you think, Christy? Let's hear from you.
Well, I think my number one biggest issue, aside from the slap motion, is really that what our arguments were. We in the lawsuit, we never got to challenge the law. Our arguments were never even brought up, like the code that we are talking about, the 47 U.S. 230 C1. I mean, the judge isn't bringing it up. Facebook doesn't want to talk about it, and it just kind of shuts us down. Here we are. We're trying to be this first case that challenges this law that really is supposed to be for pornography. And instead now for the internet cartel, it's being used to protect them. We are trying to open the gates to this and address these new situations. And we can't because the slap motion. I mean, our option now is to appeal. But
oh, we're totally psyched about the appeal, too. I think we have a very meritorious appeal, certainly.
Now,
and I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I want you to talk about that too, but one of the things that is really terrifying, which I know Facebook wants, is with Facebook slap motion, they could potentially get their lawyer fees. Now, we're talking about Facebook, who has hired two different law firms as, I don't know, 6 to 12 lawyers. They could hit me with the bill. How ridiculous is that?
Well,
wow.
that is a possibility, too. And you have to say, you know, it's funny because, you know, I see my name. I'm like one of the most notorious, you know, lawyers probably on the Internet. And everybody hates my guts, and I'm the worst lawyer in the world. And, you know, if I were such a terrible lawyer, why would Facebook need to hire not one, but two of these top 10 law firms? And they really are fine lawyers, you know. And I'd like to speak to these guys, you know, to issue these other lawyers. They all went to good schools, and, you know, they got hired at gigs that I would never get hired for. These, again, are the finest attorneys. But to be real candid, and I said this in court, too, they're not really exercising any independent legal judgment. I just think they're following the marching orders of Facebook, and Facebook just, you know, the Facebook lawyers, they have their own in-house lawyers, and they're calling the show. But what was so frustrating during the litigation, you get my confessions of the from the front here, is before Facebook filed their motion to dismiss the lawsuit, the law requires that the lawyers have a meeting, and you get on the telephone and you hash out the issues and yell and scream and curse at one another. Actually, you're not supposed to do that. That didn't happen. I'm trying to be funny here, but you're supposed to try to argue the matter and try to resolve it. I mean, sometimes it does get kind of heavy duty, but it really was interesting with the Facebook lawyers, and here's why. Because we get on the telephone, we got the conference call, and all the Facebook lawyers, you know, versus me, right? And we want to talk about the code section that Christy mentioned. For everybody out there in radio land, write this down. 47 USC... I can't remember the code section. 47 USC 230 C2. What that means is that's Chapter 47 of the United States Code. That's a government law passed by Congress. The lawmakers in Washington, D.C. create the United States Code at section number 230 and then subsection C2. So if you were on, like, you know, Google or Bing or something, just type in 47 USC 230 C and 2. And you'll see the section that pops up. And we believe it's the governing law. And now, what does this law, 47 USC 230, what does it say? Well, this is the portion of the federal law that allows Internet service providers to restrict access to content, or user-generated content, to be more specific. What is user-generated content? What is these Internet service providers? Well, an Internet service provider, sometimes called an interactive computer service provider, this would be the Internet cartel members like Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Google. And these internet service providers, they're allowed to restrict access to your content, meaning user-generated content. What does it mean to restrict access? Well, I think it's fairly straightforward. Restrict access means to maybe to take down a comment, meaning censor a comment, or take down a meme, meaning to censor a meme. It's funny, we have different words we use for this, like taking down or blocking or censoring. But I think it's appropriate to use the legal language, the black letter law that Congress had contemplated. They call it restricting access. And so, again, this code section, 47 U.S.C. 230, says that, yes, they can restrict access to your content, provided, however, they act in good faith. I'm going to give you that to you one more time. Yes, they can take down your memes, okay? They can delete your comments, provided they're acting in good faith. What does good faith mean? Well,
this
I don't really know.
We talked about this last time as well, because they didn't provide a substantial they didn't provide like a way to say like acting in good faith. They didn't tell you guys what was the reason as to why they took down your page or why they took down the content. They didn't provide that with the community guidelines.
There's no communication between Facebook and the end user. There's no communication. They don't talk to them. And even then, the information that they provide, like, hey, we took this down, sometimes they don't tell you what it was that they took down. And then they never tell you what you violated specifically. It's just go read the terms and conditions. Well, you can go and read it, and you're still going to be like, well, what did I do wrong?
It's like a generic response. It's not like a specific targeted thing. It's just they blanket it over everybody.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely a shortcoming of good faith, because they just don't communicate. And generally speaking, under California law, when two parties have an ongoing contractual relationship, like a landlord-tenant or a user of Facebook has kind of like an ongoing sort of contract, there has to be good faith. And part and parcel to good faith is the notion of communicating. And Facebook, they don't communicate at all. They're really, you know, and so we think that ultimately, they would have lost. And what I anticipated, quite frankly, was that we would simply have a trial on the good faith issue. Because, again, the internet service provider can delete your comments, provided they're acting in good faith. And like Christy was saying, when they take down your stuff, they never tell you why. I mean, if you think about it, you know, they take down your stuff, and then, of course, they put you in Facebook jail. They suspend your right to use the service. I mean, how do you know? If you're supposed to spend that 30 days in Facebook jail atoning for your sins, for which sins am I atoning? I mean, should I not have, you know, made the gay and lesbian joke? Was it the Sharia or Sharia joke that got me in trouble? Did I use the N-word? I mean, what was it that was deemed to be socially offensive? You really can't tell, and I think that's a shortcoming of good faith. And the way California law works is we should have had a trial, because whether or not a defendant acts in good faith is, of course, a question of fact for the trier of fact, for the judge or a jury. Sometimes it could be a judge in a bench trial. But we were so surprised because, again, the judge basically never got to any of these questions. The judge never once addressed our main argument. The judge never brought up 47 U.S.C. Section 230, which we believe is the controlling statute. It's the controlling black letter law, because it specifically governs and speaks to this right to restrict access. And I just got to go back again to the telephone call with the other attorneys, because they're very gentlemanly and very professional, you know. And they just basically came out and said, well, Mr. Phillips, we're going to be asking the court to dismiss it because we don't think you have a case. And they just don't get very detailed. They don't really show their hand. And so I kind of wanted to prod them a little bit, you know, gently, and say, well, come on, fellas, what about Section 47 U.S.C. 230? I mean, that seems to govern. That seems like the black letter law that is specifically on point. And they would have some kind of comeback like, well, I think we can just agree to disagree. And I'm all like, well, okay, what are we disagreeing about? Let's discuss it so we know, you know, where is the overlap of agreement and where is the portions on which we don't agree. But they wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. It really became, it was a kind of a farce is the best way to say it. And I put this in my moving papers to the court. I had executed an affidavit, which is basically kind of like a written testimony thing that, you know, just explained a little bit of it very gently, that says, you know, during the course of the litigation, my office was required to meet with the other two offices, and we discussed it. But I had given my opinion that I don't think they explored the issues, you know, the way they really should have, because if we're going to have a good faith meet and confer, they call it, then we should really explore the issues. And I think, especially because, again, this Section 230 is directly on point. I know I'm a broken record, but it says that, yes, they can restrict access, meaning, you know, take down your content, provided they're acting in good faith. If you, you know, ask anybody on the street, you don't even have to be a lawyer to say that, gosh, it seems like that's applicable. But it was so weird because the other lawyers would not discuss it in any way, shape, or form. And it's not like they would bring it up and say, well, you know, Phillips, you're wrong because yada, yada, yada. And same thing with the judge. It wasn't as if Her Honor had said that Phillips's argument is, you know, misses the mark because X, Y, and Z. The judge just never brings it up. And this was really troubling for me at a kind of a personal level. Because
so,
I've been a lawyer for 20 years.
This could be the linchpin. This could be like they could purposely be ignoring this 47 U.S.C. 2030 C2. They could be purposely ignoring this because it shows that they're not acting in good faith. This could be their linchpin.
You know, I think, you know,
yeah.
Go ahead, Christy, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we've pretty much, like, discussed amongst ourselves, and we know for a fact that they are going to avoid arguing C2 at all costs because they cannot even give, like, an argument to when they would be in violation of that. Like, they it's a mess. It really is a mess. And, I mean, Facebook, don't forget, remember, I think T-Matt, they said this to you, they could literally make Facebook a whites only if they wanted to. They could make it blacks only. It's got, what was it, carte blanche? Like, they can do whatever they want. And I hate to say it, but we're talking about the Mark Zuckerberg. He's like the richest man in the world right now. Would it be crazy to think that they might try to make offers to judges?
Nope.
I don't think, like, they, you know, Facebook buys everybody else. Why? You never know.
I mean, in my opinion, I think that is a very good chance in this situation that even people in the higher power making these decisions are being paid to have a specific decision.
I want to speak to that because, you know, it's funny. Every time, you know, I've for better or worse, I've had some cases that had notoriety on Facebook, and everyone always says that after T-Matt loses, he's going to say that the judges are bought off and it's a fix and it's a, you know. But, you know, the thing is, you're left wondering, and let me just explain some of the factual basis because I want to avoid the hyperbole and talk about the facts. In preparing for the case, you know, obviously, I have to read, you know, there's hundreds of decisions that have come before. There's a lot in the free speech arena. And some of these decisions are kind of inconsistent, and there's cases against AOL and, you know, MySpace and Google. And reading some of these decisions, they're kind of all over the place. But the first thing you start to notice is that none of these lawsuits in the last, it couldn't have been more than the last 10, 15 years or so, none of them mention 47 U.S.C. Section 230 C2. That is truly just astounding because, again, what appears to be the controlling statute, it seems like they're avoiding it. And this is what, for me, is at a very personal level kind of troubling because, you know, I get more and more jaded as the older I get and the more years I practice because when I'm reading these cases, there was, I think I mentioned the Sikh case against Facebook. The did I tell you the story of the Sikhs last time?
I think that might have been in the first installment, but I definitely remember you going over it. You could go over it if for this episode if
just
you'd like as well.
Just real briefly here, because this is so wild. In the Sikhs had their page taken down. Now, the page was called Sikhs for Justice, and they basically wanted to stop human rights violations in the Punjab region of India. I guess Punjab is a state, kind of like Mississippi is a state in, you know, America, what have you. And so the Sikhs are a minority, and apparently what the Hindu government was doing, the Hindu government is the government in New Delhi, which I guess is like 97% Hindus, and they don't like people that are Sikhs, and they try to forcibly convert them to Hinduism in the region of Punjab. And so they do the same thing, I think, with Christians and Buddhists. There's probably like maybe 1% minority of these religious factions. But these factions want freedom, right? And they had a page called Sikhs for Justice. And they even advocated an independent state of Punjab where they could have their own government. Well, one day their Facebook page was taken down, and nobody knows why. And I have a strong suspicion that the Indian government simply went and gave $1 million to Facebook, and next thing you know, the page is down. Like, why wouldn't that happen? If you think about it, the Indian government, just like all governments during all elections, I mean, there's people spending tons of money on elections.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you just give some money to Facebook? You're giving them money to put up an ad, you know, vote for so-and-so, the New Delhi government. Why not just give Facebook money to take down your competition? Or it could even be simpler than that. You have to believe the Indian government, like all governments, is going to have 500, 1,000 people, full-time job, to be on Facebook saying the Sikhs are idiots, Sikhs are losers, you know, Sikh is a weak religion, they should be Hindus and get with the game or whatever. I mean, why wouldn't they do that? Of course they're going to have that. Maybe even more kind of more insidious, those 500 or so people that are hired by the Indian government, I'm sure all day long for 8 hours a day they complain to Facebook. Every single post at the Sikh for Justice page, you can see these Indian trolls that are just complaining about the content. And does Facebook, you know, really want to get involved in the squabble? It seems to me the way Facebook does it is on a pure numbers game. There's a magic number. If somebody says, you know, a gay joke or a lesbian joke, there's a magic number. If it gets 25 complaints, they take it down. Or 125, who knows what the number is. And it may vary. You know, there may be a different threshold of sensitivity for the N-word. Or I'm just, you know, making this up. But it could be any of these things. And but the whole point is that nobody knows why the Sikhs for Justice page got taken down. So the Sikhs hired a Sikh lawyer, and they filed a lawsuit alleging discrimination. And, I mean, it kind of is discrimination, I guess, you know, if you think that Facebook will give special dispensation to the Hindu-related pages, but they don't give the same crack at the apple if you're a Sikh. They won't let you have a page if you're a Sikh, I guess. So, yeah, I guess in one hand, you can see it as a form of discrimination. And California has anti-discrimination laws. If anyone's out there listening, check up Civil Code Section 51. The UNRU Act specifically governs places of public accommodations. I think Facebook is a place of public accommodations. It sounds like a good argument, but why is the lawyer, the Sikh lawyer, not arguing 47 U.S.C. Section 230? Now, this is where you cue the scary music, like it's ominous, like something's going on, dun, dun, dun. Why is it that the Sikh lawyer, was he a lame lawyer? Well, I don't want to criticize my brother too much here, but it's funny, in the ruling, in the Sikh ruling, the court does point out various shortcomings of the Sikh lawyer. And so either the guy just didn't know what he was doing and wasn't, you know, suited to being in federal court arguing about free speech, or maybe he tried to throw the match on purpose. I mean, there's always that possibility, and that's the you know, that's where I'm leaning, because I've seen this in every single decision over the last 10, 15 years. None of these plaintiffs who are suing the internet cartel for free speech because they had something censored, none of them ever bring up 47 U.S.C. 230. And to me, that speaks volumes. What does it suggest? Well, it suggests the guy with the most shill bucks in the world, that would be, you know, what's his name? Zuckerberg.
Zuckerberg. Zuckerbot.
Yeah, he's going to be he's going to be able to use those shill bucks and make these things happen. How easy is it to hire, you know, somebody to do a collusive lawsuit where the plaintiff loses on purpose?
They're creating their own, like, precedent for their favor, in their favor.
Right, they're creating bad precedent, and where these cases, you know, they end up losing. There's not much of the plaintiff's lawyer, you know, doesn't put a very much of a fight. The Facebook lawyers insist they have a right to do what they're doing, and then there's a decision, and the decision doesn't include the black letter law at 47 U.S.C. 230. So there's all these cases over the last 10, 15 years, whatever it is, and nobody ever mentions it. And so I'm thinking, okay, this is just too bizarre, because all of these cases, am I the only one who's able to read this? And I don't think I'm really all that, because anybody looking it up on the internet who wants to look up the law, the first thing you're going to see is 47 U.S.C. 230. It's going to come up. So you got to wonder, why are none of these cases mentioning it? I believe it's because all the lawsuits that have come before have been collusive. And what's really even more frightening is that there's this one lawsuit by, I don't know if I mentioned this last time, Jared Taylor, the guy who's the white supremacist.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I remember that.
Well, anyways, let me tell you about Jared Taylor. I don't even know what a white supremacist is, but whatever his platform is, I'm okay with giving him, you know, a platform on Twitter. I don't care what he has to say. If he's a white supremacist, a Schmite supremacist, he should have a right to be on Twitter. Well, apparently he's suing Twitter because he had his page taken down. He was deplatformed by Twitter. So this guy, Jared Taylor, apparently he's like a conservative. I don't know what a conservative even means, but he has a huge conservative following, and I guess some of them are Christians. I don't even know what that means. But he was able to, I guess, hire these lawyers. Now, he got a dream team. He got this one lawyer out in Vegas who's on TV all the time. Kind of sends up red flags for me, because if they're a media lawyer, you got to start wondering if they're controlled or not, you know. Anyways, but this one lawyer in Vegas who represented Jared Taylor, he's a happening guy. He's a big shot, you know, First Amendment. He's an expert. CNN has a question. They call up him, and they put him on Geraldo to explain free speech. Then there was a second lawyer, a guy out in Michigan, who's a law professor, some guy who smokes a pipe and an intellectual type of person, presumably. And if that weren't enough to round out the dream team, they had a third lawyer, some Washington, D.C. hired gun. I can't remember his name, but it was a Washington, D.C. trial attorney. So between these three legal minds, here's the million-dollar question. Do you think any of these three lawyers are arguing 47 U.S.C. Section 230? Absolutely not. You know?
Nope.
And me, in my naivete, I tried to contact them because I know they're suing, they're representing Jared Taylor against Twitter. I'm representing Christy Scarborough and Mr. Festler, Mr. Two Moon, and Ms. Simpkins against Facebook. So I'm wanting to contact these guys and say, hey, you know, there's 47 U.S.C. 230. Why don't you guys mention it? Well, they never get back to me. Obviously, they, you know, one of them blocked me on Facebook. They just don't want to have anything to do with me, because, and when you see stuff like this, then the ominous music that you're cueing in the background, it gets even more scary. Like, you know, the Jason the 13th guy is waiting around the corner or whatever.
Oh, God.
I'm trying to be funny here, but it's a scary, scary proposition because, again, I know I'm a broken record, but if you didn't know anything about this law, the right to take down, when can Google remove your content? When can Facebook censor you? Well, you're going to end up, if you do at least 5 minutes of research, you will end up at Section 47 U.S.C. 230. And yet, in 10 to 15 years, not one case decision has ever mentioned it. And it's not like they're setting it up and say, oh, yeah, well, it's a stupid argument because. No, they just avoid it like the plague. They have nothing to do with it. And then you see these three lawyers that, of course, and by the way, the story of Jared Taylor is all over the internet. All of the conservative channels are, you know, trying to champion the cause of free speech. Well, it's just a false flag event. They're going to lose, and they're going to create more bad precedent because they're not actually mentioning Section 230. In my opinion, look, these people are – it's collusion. There's no other way to say it. I mean, I'm basically defaming these lawyers, and these guys are First Amendment experts. If I was really – you know, why don't they just come after me and sue me for defamation? You know, the point is because I'm telling the truth. What they're doing is they really are, it seems to me to be perfectly obvious, they're colluding with the enemy for the purpose of creating bad precedent. And they're all hotshot lawyers who are, you know, they talked about in the media because all of these conservative outlets, media outlets, are, you know, championing the cause of Jared Taylor. And yeah, he's got the dream team of the most badass lawyers. Well, they're going to lose, and everyone's going to know they're going to lose. But what's scary about our case is that there is not one article about it anywhere. Nobody will mention our lawsuit with the 10-foot pole. And there's a reason for that, actually, because the media hates free speech. Like any corporation, and the media is a conglomerate of corporations, they hate free speech. They want to hire crisis actors like Del Bigtree and Andrew Fakefield, who are very controlled and will follow the script and will read word for word from the teleprompter. They don't want, you know, spontaneous utterances. They don't want true freedom. They don't want, you know, some kind of attorney guy like me who's actually speaking his mind. That is the most dangerous thing. Plus, you know, I can't even really dance around it. I'm sure I'm right. Legally speaking, the law is on our side. We wrote a meritorious lawsuit. We should have won by a mile, but it's just really frightening to me to think none of these cases mention Section 230. When I tried to discuss it with the other lawyers, they just absolutely refused to discuss it to the point of it, you know, it really became kind of bitter and acrimonious between the lawyers because they just wouldn't, you know, of course, I'm not going to leave it alone. I'm still poking and prodding, but they just won't even mention it. And then when the judge gives her ruling, and with all respect to her honor, she followed suit as well, and her honor never mentioned anything about what we believe is the controlling statute. And sure, you can find hundreds of people who will tell you that T. Matthew Phillips is the dumbest lawyer in the history of dumb lawyers. That's fine. It's a free country. But I'm waiting for somebody to explain to me why my legal theory is wrong, because certainly I think we make a meritorious argument, and I don't mean to be, you know, running off. Somebody put a sock in my mouth and stopped me, but this is really frustrating. And Christy, let me ask you.
Let me try to get your guys' opinion on, because all of this stuff is important. You know, what I see them doing with the censorship agenda, the collusion, it's very real. You know, they're talking about now, if you get a strike on Twitter or something like that, or on Facebook, vice versa, they're going to share it. If you get a strike on one platform, you're going to get a strike on another. And I find this very dangerous because we're not seeing isolation of actual events. We're just seeing this, like you said, this collusion, this combination to where they're just throwing everything together. They're saying if you're bad here, you've got to be bad there. We've seen with what China's doing, building their social credit score
yes.
system, everything that's going on with that. We see them censoring their own citizens. Not Steve Jobs. His name escapes me right now. But the current head of Apple, in an interview, talked about, you know, how they're helping President Xi Jinping create that censored Chinese search engine. They are censoring their citizens. That's why we can't have access to their information. Now, what do you guys think about that? Because we're seeing this kind of We're seeing this take place. They're going ahead with the censorship, and they're not notifying us. I feel like with what you're saying regarding like the 47 U.S.C. 2030 C2 federal law, that what they're legitimately doing is removing the voice of people who are standing up, and they're not factually giving the reason. Like that could be, as I said before, the linchpin, the reason as to why we could stand up and fight back. But with things like with what's going on in China and what we see happening here in America, they're going past it and not even trying to have that logical, factual debate. They're going ahead and engaging in the censorship. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I think we all need to be a little worried because all these corporations are banding together. Like all the internet cartel, you know, they are all kind of holding each other's hands, and all of us regular people who are using these social media platforms, we're literally like a test mouse in these people's labs. If I wasn't an activist, I would probably just remove social media, but it shouldn't even be like that. We should be able to be speaking. We have to fight this. And T-Matt, like, I want you to talk a little bit too about our appeal process and what's going to happen with this and what our next step is going to be, because we can't just let this happen. And I mean, you got to understand, I'm risking, like, we're all risking quite a bit. I mean, I could potentially be served with like $20,000 bill for Facebook's lawyers over this, me fighting for my free speech. How ridiculous is that? But,
and this is just to have a page on Facebook.
Stop.
It's not even to do all kinds of extra work. It's just to speak on their platform.
Exactly. And they're making it to where you have to almost be like a drone. You can't act out. You can't do anything too crazy or you'll be done for. All I can say is that I'm going to keep fighting for my free speech and everybody else's free speech. And if somebody's out there, there's so many people out there who really don't understand what free speech means and what it means to have it.
Oh, God. You know, I have to say, not to interrupt you, but I have seen so many people. This is one thing that surprises me. There's always something surprises me. The idea, I see so many people on Facebook saying, well, it's Facebook's webpage. They can do whatever they want. And I'm just surprised at how many Americans like willfully like roll over and surrender and give up their free speech rights. It's like, wait a second. What? I mean, I don't want to sound too corny, but you know, First Amendment means something. The Second Amendment means something. They all mean something. And I'm just really blown away at how sissified Americans have become.
Yep.
Probably not the best word, but they're just so willing to give up their rights. But you know, Christy said something to me also, and I have to, well, I don't want to waive any attorney-client privilege here, but this was something that Christy originated, that the standard really should be, you know, on Facebook, that anybody should be able to go on Facebook or any of these platforms. And so long as you're not, you know, there's no porno and nudity or any violence or any criminal threats, then you should be okay. I mean, everything else should be free speech. Really those, but even those three topics may be a little bit blurred, like you say like no porno or nudity. Well, you know, that's kind of tough sometimes. What about side boob? I mean, you see that all the time. Is that supposed to be like porno? I guess sometimes it's a gray area. But as long as you're not doing like overt pornography, you know, you should be okay on Facebook. Same thing with violence. I suppose if there was like a warning, you know, warning, graphic content or violent content, and let the user decide whether they want to unmask it themselves, or maybe, you know, 18 plus, 18 and above, some, you know.
I think that's kind of where I have an issue, because it seems like at the end of the day, they're trying to desensitize us from reality. Like you can't censor everything and then expect people to have a full comprehensive understanding of what's going on. When we start censoring things that we don't agree with, we literally only understand 50% of the equation. The other 50% is saying, okay, I get that, and that's why I don't support it. Whenever we're going through chopping things off, we're doing a disservice in the long run.
Well, I know, and that's really what they want. I mean, they really want, they don't want free speech anymore. They don't want independent thought. They really want to control everybody. And, of course, you know what the word government means. The word govern means to control. The word ment is a Latin prefix, basically, you know, for mind. And you're talking about mind control. And they really want to do it. You know, for so often, the government, or so long, rather, the government controlled television. Well, television has lost, I guess, its appeal in the last few years, not so much because of all the fake news, but because television is not interactive. Most people are on, you know, interactive type stuff where they can at least select the type of news they want, or just read about Wall Street all day long, or just read about GMOs all day long. And so the powers that be that controlled the television have kind of migrated over to, you know, Facebook and Twitter, and they want to control that also.
Yes.
And it's really, I mean, it's the CIA. The government is behind all this. The government wants to control everything, and they want to feed people GMOs because they want people to be sick. They want people to be chronically ill and have Crohn's disease and celiac disease from eating them GMOs and getting the pesticides.
And let me jump on that if I could. You know, the fact that we see this kind of conversion of mainstream media kind of trying to infiltrate social media. Anderson Cooper, I forget how much he's being paid per episode, but he has a contract with Facebook to where they can put out their journalism project. They're trying to gradually pull people from TV onto social media. And during this process, you know, they're kicking out people who built up social media, who created, you know, the audience that social media has right now. And I think that's what I was trying to talk about beforehand. You know, they're trying to remove people who have the voice, who didn't go through all the mainstream channels, who didn't become Anderson Cooper or you know, any of these other people that are out there. We built up an authentic, independent organization, and that's what threatens them because, like you said, they want us eating GMOs. We talk about how GMOs are bad. They want us to take vaccines. We expose what's in the inserts. They want us to look at our phones. We look up and see the chemtrails. They don't want us to have any kind of ability to have, like you said, they're afraid of free speech because with free speech we can expose their agendas. And I feel like that's what's dangerous, is because they're trying to desensitize us or desensitize everybody else from what's actually going on. And when they censor us, they're putting us in this category of non-reality whenever it's like it's mind-blowing.
Very good point. Well, you mentioned the part about reality. They don't want people that are real. Now, Christy Scarborough is real. She's a real person. My clients, Greg Fessler, he is about as real as they come. And same thing with Rudy Tumoon and Gina Simkins. These are real people who have real experience and have real stuff to say. Now, that's, again, that's scary to corporate America, who wants to everything packaged and sold with a 15-second bumper and a 20-second trailer and then 45 minutes of content, 15 minutes go to commercial. They want it all controlled. I mean, you know what's funny, too, is how come nobody ever takes down Del Bigtree? It's like Del Bigtree never has to worry about censorship because he's part of the game. Del Bigtree, of course, he works for Merck. He's controlled by the whole pharmaceutical industrial complex, and he's supposed to be the anti-vaxxer that you follow. They don't want anti-vaxxers following Christy. And by the way, Christy has the most popular anti-vaccine page, actually abolitionist page, on Facebook. It's called Corrupt Vaccines. It's a real page, you know, by someone who really wants to stop vaccines. And they don't want the powers that be. They don't want people going to Christie's page at Corrupt Vaccines. They want you to go to Del Bigtree's, you know, and all that Robert F. Kennedy nonsense, because they're trying to sell you the false promise of safe vaccines. Everything Del Bigtree, that stupid vaxxed movie, it's all about, oh, we need more safety studies. We need safe vaccines because we want to vaccinate your kids to death with safe vaccines. If we're going to have mandates, the vaccines need to be safe. It's like, wait, there's no such thing as a safe vaccine. There never has been. There never will be, because all vaccines are weapons of war. They are designed to kill and injure, and there's no safe way to kill or injure somebody, okay? But they don't want – what I just said is real. That's about as real as it comes. And you can imagine nobody wants to hear T. Matthew Phillips say that. So that's why there's no articles, you know, about our lawsuit. There's this is the only radio show that will have us. You know, no one else wants this content, you know, because
They don't want people to know about us. If they know about us, they're going to want to come to us, and they're going to want to hear what we have to say. And then they're going to wake up, and that's a big no-no for the government and for the corporations.
Yeah, we really do present like an imminent sort of grave danger to the establishment, because we're free thinkers, and our message is powerful. We get so many people that come to – we have another page, the Vaccine Abolition Society, and we get tons of people – you know, we're actually the only group that opposes vaccines. If you think about it, like the National Vaccine Information Center, everyone talks about, oh, yeah, they're doing so much for – the National Vaccine Information Center is basically pharma. If you read their mission statement, and I'm not making this up, you can actually read the mission statement online. It says that NVIC, that's National Vaccine Information Center, neither opposes nor supports vaccines. They just want to get the truth out, whatever the truth means. But they're basically vaccine neutralists. You know, I must be a broken record. I've said this before, but if you look, say you're a Martian, and you, like, come to Facebook wondering what the vaccine debate is all about, you would see half of Facebook is screaming for more vaccines. Yes, vaccines. Yes, GMOs. And we love them, right? Well, what's the other side? Are they saying the opposite, get rid of them? No. The other side is just rambling on vague platitudes about the truth. You know, we want the truth. Well, what does the truth even mean? You know, where are the people that oppose?
Placebo studies. That's the worst one. People who ask for vaccine studies, what is going to happen in those trial studies to the kids that are in those studies? Like, when you ask for more safety studies, you're asking for more vaccine injured. Don't do it, you know?
You're asking for more.
Crazy.
I mean, and what's funny, too, is, you know, people say vaccine safety studies all the time. There's that one shill that comes to mind, Joshua Coleman. This guy supposedly has a vaccine-injured kid. He supposedly is, like, devoted his whole life. Of course, he's unemployed. Nobody knows where he works. He's working on Facebook. He's, you know, getting them shill bucks to say, look, I have a vaccine-injured kid, but I'm not against vaccines. I'm willing to give it another shot. You know, I'm not against – why would I oppose vaccines? And at the end of the day, it's mind-blowing, because this guy, he was funny. He's in Washington, D.C. It was a couple of years ago. He was giving this speech saying – we need more vaccine safety studies. It's like, why? You know, why encourage them? I mean, and, you know, I would say this too. For all the people that are out there urging a vaccine safety study, like, they're not really, they don't have an idea for a safety study. What they're really saying is, hey, government, can you please do a safety study for me? Or corporation, can you please do your own safety study and come up with the parameters? I mean, if you were going to do a safety study, how would you do it? I mean, and let me ask the better question, whose kids are we going to use? Okay,
exactly.
You got to use kids. You can't really do the test on cockroaches or mice. It's really not a comparable scientific proper study.
That's what's crazy about it, is when they're asking for more of these studies, they're basically asking for more kids to be shot up in different variations of the flu shot, of whatever vaccine it is, whatever kind of formula they have for the shot. They're saying, hey, find different sects of children and shoot them up, already knowing that they may not work. And this is the overarching problem with vaccines. It's not settled. There is no formula for it. Like, everybody's body chemistry is different. And whenever we're doing these things, injecting these foreign bodies into basically babies, into children who haven't even developed yet, we're essentially stunting them. And we're asking for more studies. We're trying to stunt more children so we can still try to find some kind of perfect universal flu shot cure. That's like trying to find cancer. Like it doesn't make sense. And then you see all of these kind of weird polio-like viruses show up. You see kids developing things like AFM, you know, all these. There's studies coming out, too, about how much aluminum is within children's brains, and how that's actually, you know, contributing to the autism spectrum disorder. Just the other day, I didn't get around to posting it, but it's like 1 in 40 children are already part of the autism spectrum disorder. And that's because of big pharma, vaccines, as we talked about before, the GMOs, all of these things, they play on the body. They bioaccumulate. They mess with our genetics. This is where eugenics and epigenetics comes into play. We're literally, I hate it, and it sounds so crazy to say, but we're canceling the future generations trying to play God. And a lot of this stuff is dangerous. I don't think a lot of people take the time to look at it. I mean, look at the inserts. Look at formaldehyde, aluminum, just like all the other stuff that you're putting in a child. Would you even eat that? And yet you're forcibly injecting it into something who hasn't even developed an immune system.
Well,
and then when
and
it
I
violently to, reacts, it's crazy. Sorry, go ahead.
I want to bring this up because T-Mac told me this once, and it's so spot on. You know, what happens when you inject that stuff, all that vaccine, all that heavy metals into your muscle? What does it do? Does it leave? Does it go in your bloodstream? Well, he actually told me was, look at all these people when they're really old, their muscles are all deteriorating, and then they all of a sudden get Alzheimer's. Well, that's because when their muscles are deteriorating, all those heavy metals, I'm probably not even saying it the right way, but all those heavy metals are breaking loose into the bloodstream, and bam, that's why all these old people, old folks, are having Alzheimer's disease. You know, they can't remember anything. They have lots of issues. Did I say that right, Dee?
Yeah, that's a theory that I have, actually. You said it remarkably well. The thing is, when they give you a vaccine, the needle goes either in the thigh muscle or, you know, in the butt, or it goes in the deltoid muscle on your shoulder. But, you know, there is no study, there's no evidence anywhere that nobody knows of where do the vaccine ingredients go. Can any doctor or scientist actually trace the route of the vaccine ingredients? Well, I guess some must, you know, go through the liver. Some must go, because you see, you know, people get eczema. So some of the ingredients must be digested, and I guess you would poop it out, you know. But what ingredients stay in the body? And most specifically, which ingredients get stuck in the muscle? You have to believe that in the muscle mass itself, some of the ingredients will get just trapped in there. And like Christy was saying, you know, when you get older, maybe the muscles atrophy, and, you know, just the fact of old age, that act may release some of the toxins that were stored in the muscles over all those years, and that could be a reason for Alzheimer's, because Alzheimer's is essentially, the neurons aren't firing. And if there are metals in the vaccine, which we know there are, there's heavy metals and there's aluminum, which is not technically a heavy metal, but still it has the same effect on the nervous system. It will fry the nerves. And next thing you know, a person gets Guillain-Barre syndrome, or you mentioned AFM, acute flaccid myelitis, acute flaccid paralysis, transverse myelitis. They have all these clever names. They call it MS. But it's all the same thing. They call it Alzheimer's when it affects elderly people and their memory. But I believe all of these maladies I just mentioned are tied to the introduction of heavy metals and other metals into the body, which fries the nervous system and causes all sorts of, you know, problems with the neurons. And so, Christy, you said that absolutely correct. And I think it's a very plausible theory. So.
Well,
there's studies that prove it.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Well, like, kind of touch bases back on the lawsuit again before, you know, wherever this, what direction we go. Is there anything that we can tell the listeners about what the appeal process could bring?
Yes.
What that
will
happen?
Oh, well, yeah, we definitely want to appeal. Now, what an appeal is it's you're going up to a different court. So you get a different, you know, actually not a judge. They call them justices because I guess they're higher up on the food chain and the legal system. At least in California, they call them justices. And we'll get a panel of, you know, presumably three justices who will examine the issues. And when you do an appeal, it's not supposed to be like a second crack at the apple where you're unhappy about something and you just go, you know, get another opinion. You have to actually come up with a legal reason why you think that the judge made an error. Now, in our case, we believe that the judge, respectfully, made a huge error, made several errors. Number one, they never mentioned the controlling statute, which we believe is 47 U.S.C. 230. But also, we think that the court really got it wrong on the issue of censorship being free speech. Just as a fundamental matter, censorship is wrong, and there cannot be a constitutional right to do something that is inherently wrong. And I'm sure that everyone will agree with me when they say censorship is wrong, because censorship contemplates taking down something that, you know, is not otherwise unlawful. You know, again, if there were, and this is, you know, Christie's thought, but I totally adhere to it, if so long as you're not actually, you know, issuing criminal threats online, any kind of criminal type, you know, threat, as long as you're not doing blatant pornography or like hardcore violence, you should be okay. And so when they like take down the Seek page like they did, or we had a terrific meme with, I can't think of his name, the guy with the robot voice. He uses a wheelchair. He's from Cambridge. He's supposed to be like the hotshot physicist. I'm
Stephen
not really
Hawkins.
Impressed. Stephen Hawkins, yeah. So we had a meme of him, you know, sitting in the wheelchair, and the caption read, "Vaccine injury is real." Well, we must have had 100,000 complaints about that, right? You know, and I really do believe, seriously, I do believe that Stephen Hawkins is vaccine injured. He was like in his 20s, you know, life was good. He was at college, partying at Cambridge, you know, and next thing you know, he can't move, he can't walk. Same thing happened to Lou Gehrig. He's like this, you know, very healthy first baseman for the New York Yankees. Then the next day he can't hold a baseball. He can't stand up. I mean, what would suddenly cause that? Well, you know, it's funny, too, about Lou Gehrig's disease. They call it ALS. They had to give it an acronym because all diseases now need acronyms. It's just part of the game. So, but if you think about it, like Lou Gehrig was diagnosed, I think, in 1939, and I think it was on July 4th in 1941, if my memory serves me correctly, they had the big shindig at Yankee Stadium, which was basically a false flag event where, oh, gosh, Lou Gehrig, it's terrible, but we're going to raise money for Lou Gehrig's disease, you know, also called ALS disease. That was what, like 80 years ago? And are they any closer to finding out, you know, the cause of
nope.
ALS? Absolutely not. And that shows you what kind of a hoax it is, because if you read the New York City newspapers in 1941, there are people raising money to cure this disease that, you know, the New York City lost their beloved first baseman, the Iron Horse, whatever his nickname was, Lou Gehrig. And so, but despite all these years, they're still not any closer. And you know what they do blame it on is eugenics. Every disease nowadays is blamed on family history. You know what? It's your fault for fibromyalgia,
yep,
myasthenia gravis, whatever you have, it's your fault because you come from inferior stock and it's your DNA. You have, you know, autism. They always want to say that that's genetic because, of course, they can't admit it's the vaccines. But anyways, back to the appeal process. We think
real
that
Before we jump into the appeal process, because I definitely want to get into that, but to kind of just put a capstone on this whole vaccine injury stuff to talk about what's going on with modern medicine. On the eve of Thanksgiving, New York State Senator Jose Peralta, who was 47, died. After getting a flu shot, he was sick for 2 weeks and died on the eve of Thanksgiving, went into septic shock and died after receiving a flu shot. This is a modern day example. This didn't happen a few years ago. This happened this year. And that's what's crazy is we're still having to deal with vaccine injuries, all the other things that happen with that, the scrambling of genetics, the autism rate spiking, all of these things stem from that. So medical knowledge, medical freedom, all of that's important, and it falls underneath the category of free speech. We would not be able to openly discuss these types of things if we didn't have other people out there doing the work, doing research, and then providing us with content to discuss and to go on. Free speech is so essential that most people don't really take the time to understand like how critical this really is. But if you could, so we could put a capstone on the vaccines and everything that's important with that, you said you're going to be talking about the appeal process.
Oh, yeah, I will. You know, I have to say quickly on the Jose Peralta, it's funny because there's a poster that he was that you can see where he's advocating people to get the flu shot. He was actually one of those people who was out there trying to champion the cause. He's one of those brain dead people, like, yeah, go get a flu shot, go salute the flag down at the post office. You know, he's really like a champion. And irony of ironies, he dies of the flu shot, man. So how is the mainstream media going to spin it? Well, by and large, they're kind of leaving it alone. They don't really want to say very much. But the few reports that mention it, they always say that he died not from the flu shot, but from complications of the flu shot. They always have to put like an intercessor, a barrier of some kind of intervening cause to kind of remove the suspicion from the vaccine itself. Listen, we all know what happened.
And the vaccines.
Well, the vaccine straight up killed him, okay? So everybody listening, I'm a vaccine expert. I can tell you right now, the vaccine straight up killed Jose Peralta, and his family should be suing for wrongful death. Yeah. And there should be criminal charges filed in New York City against the vaccine maker because someone got killed on purpose. I mean, but of course, everyone's going to act like, oh, well, it was maybe a bad reaction. And they're going to start saying Jose Peralta, well, he's Honduran, and people from Honduras have a different genetic makeup, and they're more susceptible to certain strains of horse serum that's used in an excipient in the vaccine process. And they're going to try to muddy the water and say, essentially, it was his fault because he's born of inferior stock. You know, they do this. I got to say this also because you see it come up with the, I can't even pronounce it, the MTHFUCKR gene. I don't know how to pronounce that. It's the gene that they... I don't know how to say it, but it's the gene that they want to look for to find out if you're susceptible to vaccines. And I see all these, you know, young moms, you know, talking about this. Oh, I'm going to have my kid tested to see if they have this gene, because if they have the gene, then they may be more predisposed to vaccine injury. And I want to say, stop. Your genetic makeup has nothing to do with whether poison will poison you, okay? Poison is poison regardless of your genetic makeup, okay? And yet people are doing all these, it's like MTHR, it looks like, you know, it's hard to pronounce, but I don't know what it actually stands for.
They refer to it as the mother effer gene.
Gene, yes, that's in common parlance here. We were told we need to keep it PG for today, so I'm trying to be respectful. But the point I'm making is that all this nonsense is really eugenics. It's, you know, they don't use the word eugenics because it has an unsavory kind of connotation. Instead, they use the word gene therapy. Gene therapy sounds terrific because they're going to cure modern disease through gene therapy. You think you might have HIV? Well, gene therapy. They're going to, in fact, there are some scientists I was reading about this morning that is in ethical trouble, I guess, in India, because he created some people that will not be predisposed to getting HIV. Well, they're going to do that. They're going to say, you know, autism. Eventually, they're going to say autism is a problem. They're eventually going to recognize it probably in the next 18 months. Autism is so bad, and you know what? Some scientist found the autism gene. Aha! It's the, you know, X131 gene. It's located in the womb, and so they're going to have mandatory genetic modification for high school girls when they turn 16. They're going to get all up in the uterus, and they're going to tweak a few things. They're going to do some gene splicing and cutting, and so now that they've isolated the autism gene and they've removed it, then they'll be able to stop autism. And you know what they'll do is they'll make it like it's a mandatory thing, like you don't have a choice. They're going to say autism is so bad, we can't allow you to be born with an autistic kid. We got to make sure that every parent gets their... Now, they're not really going to be doing anything to the genes. They're just going to go into the womb and make the woman infertile because they believe that, you know, they want to basically kill off the human race. So... But wait, should we go back to the appeal thing, or should I keep going on with the conspiracy theories?
I would like to talk about it. Yeah. Well,
I mean,
we could still talk about the appeal stuff, but
let's get the appeal process down for this episode, because, you know, the depopulation and the dehumanization campaigns that we're seeing, not only with the vaccines, the chemtrails, the GMOs, society and culture, that's very real. But for this episode, yeah, for sure. Let's get the appeal process discussed, and then we'll go from there.
And well, here's the punchline is, you know, the court's reasoning, man, the court in our case said that Facebook has a free speech right to censor us. And, you know, it really comes down at the, you know, the end of the day to the words that the court used. And the court said that that Facebook can either decide to publish content or not publish content. And if they decide, like, to not publish your content, well, that's kind of like a publishing decision. And publishing decisions are protected by the First Amendment, you know, which is kind of weird because don't we have the right to make publishing decisions ourselves too? But forgetting that for a moment, it really comes when – this is the million-dollar question. When Facebook removes a comment or when they take down a page, like what is that? Is that the restricting of access to content or is it Facebook deciding to not publish something? It really depends how you characterize the act. Again, let's say Facebook takes down your comment. According to the court, that is a decision not to publish. And Facebook, according to the court, has a free speech right to decide to publish or not publish. And if they decide to not publish your content, well, they can do it under the heading of free speech because it's the inherent right of publishers to make publishing decisions. They have a free speech right to make publishing decisions or the inverse of that equation, to decide not to publish. Well, I don't think that's accurate factually. That kind of misses the mark. I prefer to look at it as the restriction of access to content because that's a much better fit. If you think about it, follow me on this one. Again, the judge's ruling was that Facebook has a right to publish or not publish, and this is all about their publishing decisions. Well, stop for a second, okay? The content that they are taking down was already published, okay? It was published without Facebook knowing about it. And by the way, I'm sure there's probably at least 100 Facebook employees who are listening to this right now and their attorneys, and we purposely wanted to make them listen to the whole thing, the whole show till we got to the good part because they're waiting for me. Well, they want me to reveal the battle plan and what the exact issue is. And that's really what it comes down to. Are we talking about a decision of Facebook to not publish, or are we talking about a decision of Facebook to restrict access to user-generated content? When they take down a Facebook page, I'm saying that, and of course our lawsuit argues that they are restricting access to content, and therefore 47 U.S.C. 230 should apply. According to the court, Facebook didn't even make this argument. That's what's funny is the court really made an argument that Facebook really didn't make. Facebook was almost more conservative in their approach, but the court really just granted almost complete license for these internet companies to do whatever they want. If the ruling that we have from the current court were to become final and become precedent, it would be the worst precedent. It would basically kill the First Amendment. If the judge's ruling, the one that currently is now the current ruling, if that were to remain, it would be literally the death of free speech because you would never be able to sue any of these companies because all they have to do is say, oh, well, that was a publishing decision. Oh, we decided to not monetize your page anymore. That was one of our publishing decisions. Oh, we decided to cancel your subscription. It was just a publishing decision. They'll be able to get away with everything. It's got to be the judge's ruling. Again, I have to be respectful, but it's draconian in its awfulness. It really is a horrible, horrible ruling if you're down with free speech. Now, if you're a corporation that hates free speech, then it's a good thing. If you're the government and the CIA, then it's a great thing because it basically says that good ideas will never make it out there to the mainstream unless the mainstream media allows it. And what that means is people like Christie and Gina Simkins and Rudy Tumoon and Greg Fessler will always be marginalized. And I know these folks. I've had the privilege to work with them, and I've known them before that, but they have a lot to say, a lot of valuable stuff, and it's just a shame to think that their ideas can't make it to the marketplace of ideas because Facebook wants to censor them. Because look at who gives all the money to Facebook. It's going to be all the big corporations. You know that companies like Merck and Pfizer and Lilly are giving money to Facebook all day long, at least in the form of advertisements, you know, because I'm sure they're boosting all their posts and paying for the stuff that they do. And anyways, you got to wonder, this is a separate aside about Facebook, but imagine if you were Mark Zuckerberg, you know, trying to make a come up a few years back, in your example, telling your parents, right? You say, hey, Mom and Dad, I got a great idea for a business. It's going to be a real moneymaker. And they say, well, how does it work? Well, first of all, it's free to use. And you say, okay, well, wait a second. How can you make money on a service that's free to use? In fact, how did Facebook amass all the billions and billions? How did Zuckerberg get like, what, $160 billion personal fortune on a service that's free to use? You know, it's basically free speech is for sale. Free speech is for sale to, you know, the highest bidder. And it's bad enough that Facebook has devolved to mob rule. This is one of the things we argued in the lawsuit, too, is that, free speech is controlled by how many people complain. And whether it's the government of India or whether it's Merck employees or Pfizer employees, they are told as part of their gig to complain. And so that's why, for me, like right now, like I'm, you know, T. Matthew Phillips' account is in suspension, Facebook jail. In fact, you know, it's funny. What we call Facebook jail, nobody knows this here because it's news from the front, right? Facebook has a term for Facebook jail. They actually call it read-only status. So right now I'm not in Facebook jail. Huh. It's funny how they have these colorful kind of innocuous euphemisms, right? They say that T. Matthew Phillips' Facebook account is in read-only status, meaning that I can go on Facebook and read what other people write, but I am expressly verboten, forbidden to comment. I can't like, I can't share, I can't, you know, personal message
See,
to
that's,
grandma.
That's dangerous.
You know?
That's whenever you become like unperson somehow. You're just like a watcher, an observer to the world. I feel like that's a little dangerous. Actually,
yeah.
Very
well,
dangerous.
Nobody. Well, the thing is, I mean, I filed a lawsuit. I've sued Monsanto in a class action lawsuit. I've sued the state of California to stop the vaccine mandate. I mean, where was Robert F. Kennedy? He was trying to sell safe vaccines to everybody. It is the biggest shill in the world is Robert F. Kennedy. But the point is, because I've done these lawsuits, everybody knows to complain about TMP, and the same thing I see happening to my clients. And anyways, back to the appeals process. The appeal, the legal issue, the fulcrum point on which the entire case turns is how you describe an act of censorship. How do you describe the takedown of a page? How do you describe the removal of a post or a comment? Well, is that Facebook making a publishing decision, or is it Facebook restricting access to content? I don't think it's a publishing decision because the content was already published, and this is significant. And it's kind of sad, but the court glossed over this subtlety. But I think it's exactly the linchpin, I guess you would call it, of the case, the keystone of the case, again, is how do you describe when Facebook censors you? Is that, you know, just merely a publishing decision of Facebook, which is protected by the First Amendment, or is it the restriction of access to content, which is permissible under federal law but subject to a good faith requirement? And that's the issue. Now, I just wonder, is the Court of Appeals going to totally play, dodgeball here and just dodge the question? It was enormously frustrating. In my briefs to the court, I mean, you probably can tell I'm about as obnoxious as a lawyer as there could be, because I'll say something over and over and over again to drum it in someone's head. Well, in my legal briefs, I must have mentioned 47 U.S.C. 230 about 100,000 times. And I even mentioned the fact that the other lawyers would never bring it up. I mentioned the fact that here's this case that never mentions it. Here's this case. And, you know, I'm kind of wondering aloud in the briefs, like, how come nobody will mention this? And I even said, maybe in the next brief from Facebook, they might bring up the topic of the governing law. And I hit that nail on the head so many times, I thought for sure that Her Honor's ruling would, you know, speak to 47 USC. But remarkably, the court's decision never, ever mentions it. And I don't know what inference to draw at this point, but go ahead.
What could they say? I'm just thinking, if they did bring it up, what could they say, like, that would be in favor of Facebook? Because I don't think they could say anything.
I think they would say is they say they're acting in good faith. And frankly, that's where we thought the trial would be. We thought that we would survive this motion to dismiss and then ramp up and get ready for trial. And the issue at trial would be, did Facebook exercise good faith? And that's kind of a fun thing to do at trial because it's really fertile ground for argument. You can be colorful, and I thought it would be a fun trial to do, but we're not going to get there, I guess, because Facebook just doesn't want to deal with the issue of whether or not they're acting in good faith. They just want to remove every lawsuit from the word go and just absolutely get rid of it because, you know, let's be honest, they want to control people. The thing that's the most scary about the internet cartel is that they don't behave like greedy corporations. You know, I'm used to railing against the greedy corporations like Monsanto, like they're bad because they're greedy. You know, and that's how corporations are, and we're used to, you know, we're acclimated. We expect corporations to be greedy. But all of a sudden, you have these corporations that really, you know, for YouTube, for Google, for Twitter, for Facebook, what's more important for them is to control. Control is actually the name of the game now. And that, to
yes.
me, just there's three letters. The call word, of course, is CIA. You have to believe that the CIA has taken over the internet cartel, and they just want to control everybody. You know, they do an IPO, a public offering that, you know, Zuckerberg did, I think, back in 2012. I think that was just window dressing. Because you got to ask yourself, what corporation is going to put control in front of making money? Well, look at corporations. What is the legal duty of a corporation? A corporation really only has one duty. A corporation doesn't have a legal duty to make society better or to clean up the environment. A corporation's only duty is to pursue profit. And yet we have corporations like YouTube who doesn't care about money. I mean, you can see how many you know, YouTube has been demonetizing all these accounts. A good friend of mine, Bart Sabrell, who did a funny thing on the way to the moon and Astronauts Gone Wild, he is the premier Apollo 11 expert in terms of explaining the Apollo 11 hoax. Well, he had a terrific channel on YouTube, and it was monetized. He had advertisers who were putting money on his videos. And one day, YouTube says, we don't want to have your account monetized anymore. And they took away Bart's right to earn a living on YouTube. And that's bad enough in itself, but take the next step. YouTube also shot themselves in the foot because when companies like Best Buy or Kia Motors or CVS, any of these corporations are putting money on Bart's videos, well, part of the money goes to YouTube. And they get part of the monetization also. Well, YouTube has said, we don't care about money. It's more important for us to control content. That is a scary proposition because, again, you see corporations not behaving in the greedy way that we've come to love and expect from corporations. They're acting like control mongers. And that, to me, suggests government takeover. It doesn't seem like they're a corporation anymore. YouTube now is the government, and that likely extends to Facebook. You know, somebody said if you put Facebook and Instagram together, you get FBI. You know, I don't know.
Oh, God.
You know, I mean, it's funny, but you have to believe that control is the name of the game for the government because, again, govern means to control. Ment or mentis means mind. It's all about mind control because the way to affect engineer society is to control people's thoughts. And if you have these crisis actors like Del Bigtree and Andrew Fakefield and Robert F. Kennedy all day long talking about safe vaccines, we need safer vaccines, we need safety studies, safety, safety, safety. Well, some people, are going to be gullible, even like a person of average, ordinary intelligence. They're going to eventually start thinking that safe vaccines are a possibility. But the point is, there's no such thing as a safe vaccine. It is absolutely can't be done. And yet you got these guys, everybody associated with the Vax movie, trying to sell this false promise of safe vaccines. And it's annoying, but that's what we've devolved to because of all the control element on Facebook. So, but Christy, do you want to take over and have like a last word? Or?
Yeah. So, as of now, we will be appealing the decision, the judge's error. And if anybody wants to follow me, you can find me on Instagram and Facebook at Corrupt Vaccines. There is a Facebook page called Scarborough vs. Facebook Inc. Where we'll have some updates there from time to time, and it's just like a community page where lots of people just share like funny Facebook memes and things like that. And we do have a GoFundMe. It's GoFundMe.com/help to Facebook. We are still asking for donations because we are still going forward with it. I believe that there's going to be a think of fee for filing appeals. So, yes, anybody who can help and donate, that would be amazing for me. I think that's pretty much it. Did I miss anything?
Well, I would also invite everybody to come to the Vaccine Abolition Society on Facebook because we are the only organization in North America that actually opposes vaccines. And if you have any questions about vaccines or vaccinology, do drop in, and we hope to answer any questions. And I also wanted to thank our host for having us because nobody else will.
Very, very true. Thank you so much. It's always awesome coming on here.
Well, the pleasure is mine. I mean, you guys do most of the work. I'm just here trying to help, get the word out. I wish I could say, hey, what's the final word? But you guys took care of that already. Is there what's something that you want the public to know? I mean, I feel like we've been banging the drum about free speech and how people, need to stand up for their own rights and for everybody else's rights and why that's important. But what are your guys's, I guess, last words to the audience?
Don't let these people take your speech from you. Don't let them take away your rights. Fight back. If you don't really want to fight, help me fight. I'm open to anybody's support, whether it be emotional or whatever. I'll take everything I can get. Don't trust these corporations. Be mindful and always, always, always refuse vaccines.
And I just want to leave with a quote by actually my client, Rudy Tumoon. He's got a terrific book called Aggression's Child. Of course, they'll never sell it on Amazon because it's that powerful. But, he says, know your human right. Be what you come here for. Those are incredibly powerful words. And on a personal note, I would tell everybody that censorship is not free speech. And take it from me, censorship is wrong. Censorship is not free speech. And with that, I guess we sign out here.
Thank you. Nice. Bye, guys.
Thank you guys so much for coming on. I can't wait to have you guys back on. And whenever we hear more about the appeal process, what goes on with that, come back on and let the good people know. Thank you, guys.
Good.
Okay, thank you.
And there they go. Christy Scarborough and T. Matthew Phillips. Powerful stuff. If you guys have not checked out the two other installments of this epic discussion, of free speech, of what's going on in the world, why we actually need to have discussions about these types of things. I'll put the links in those description bar in the description bar below. Really, really powerful interview. And if you guys want something to think about, realize that in 2004, all the way back in 2004, the Pentagon killed its LifeLog project. Now, I'm reading this from KurzweilAI.net. That's Ray Kurzweil, the head of Google. Its artificial intelligence department, talking about killing their LifeLog project. A few months later, Facebook launches. So whenever T. Matthew Phillips is talking about how these lawsuits that go back at least 10 to 15 years, he's talking about how they are, by design, staying away from this federal law, from 47 U.S.C. 2030 C2. So when we're pointing these types of things out, when we're trying to get this information out there to you guys, it comes from a well-researched standpoint, you see. And I'm saying all this so that you guys, I don't know what that was about, something happened over here on our end. I'm saying all this so that you guys understand we're doing this for you and for those who come after. Our rights are not given to us by government. No law can give you freedom, okay? The same way we're talking about censorship paradoxically and philosophically being the opposite of freedom, of free speech. No law can give you freedom, and we are trying to fight for yours. However, that's all I really have for you guys and gals. If you have any questions, feel free to email me. I'll have it in the description bar below. And as always, guys and gals, stay vigilant. Expose lies and share truth. This is Noisera, Freedom Faction, and Christy Scarborough of Corrupt Vaccines, and T. Matthew Phillips, out.